this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
Welcome to the Red State Town Hall program. I'm your host, Primo Mondoni. My co-host, Ken Brown, will join me in a couple of minutes. Please visit the show's website at redstatetownhall.com. While you're there, be sure to like us on both Facebook and Twitter. If you wish to contact us, the email address is Primo, P-R-E-M-O, at redstatetownhall.com. Our show is broadcast here on Red State Talk Radio, America's premier grassroots conservative internet talk radio network. The show is also syndicated through iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Podomatic, TalkStream Live, Player.fm, Roku, and at least a dozen other websites. You can listen to the station using our Android, iPhone, and BlackBerry apps. Visit the station's website, redstatetalkradio.com, to download the appropriate app for your smartphone. If you don't have a smartphone, you can listen using any phone on the station's 24/7 listener line provided by TalkStream Live by dialing 605-562-4209. Before we start the show, let's give a shout-out to our AM and FM and digital affiliates, WJNW AM 1650, Hermitage, Tennessee, Talk Radio AM 1620, KTFL, Gilbert, Arizona, WMQL Radio FM 105.5, Brevard, North Carolina, Coffman County Talk Radio AM 1680, KCTR, Terrell, Texas, WDFP Digital Radio, Atlanta, Georgia, and Tax Pro Radio, Gainesville, Georgia. With that, let's bring on my co-host from Atlanta, Georgia, Mr. Ken Brown. How are you today, Mr. Brown?
Gainesville, Georgia, huh? That's
not Gainesville, Georgia. Yeah, I looked that up. One of the last times we had the show, I couldn't remember, but I think I said Gainesville, but I wasn't positive. So I double checked my stuff, and that is where it is, Gainesville, Georgia. Yeah,
about an hour drive, over an hour.
Probably about the same for me, really, because I'm actually closer, but I got to go through the mountains, I think, pretty much to get there, if I remember right. Anyway, let's get started. this first story just makes you just think about how screwed up this country is in a way. I don't know if you there's a report. There's a congressman, McCall. I forget where he's from off the top of my head, but there's an article from CNS News where he's talking about how DHS, which is Department of Homeland Security, okay? Homeland Security. And they're spending more money on climate change than they are on combating terrorism. Now, isn't that it?
And what is this country most concerned with in the polls?
Well, security. The country as a whole and population are concerned with national security, and they're concerned with terrorism and all that kind of stuff, and they're concerned with the economy and a lot of other things. But I'm telling you, climate change is at the bottom of the damn list. I don't give – you take any poll over the last several years, and anybody with half a brain, if your IQ is above room temperature, you're not worried about climate change.
Well, you know, the funny thing is let's just go hypothetical here and say that there is a problem with climate change. Even if we stopped everything we're doing and we didn't do it one iota anymore, and we cleaned up everything we could clean up, it wouldn't matter a lick, Primo. China's not going to do anything. India's not going to do anything. The rest of the world's not going to do anything. It wouldn't matter.
Yeah, we'd be the only idiots. We'd be the only idiots that would self-destruct our entire economy and our entire way of life over a theory.
It would make no sense. Just like if this is huge in the polls, if number one was climate change, I'd worry about this country. I really would worry about this country.
Well, I'm worried about it, even though it's not necessarily a big thing. But I'm still scared, but for a lot of reasons. But this goes to show how out of touch this administration is, and how they're letting their own political ideology trump common sense.
They have no common sense.
Well, Department of Homeland Security should not spend one single thin dime on climate change. If we're going to spend money on climate change, it should not come from this budget. Maybe the EPA or something or whatever, maybe the Department of Energy, you could say. But it'd be like taking, let's say, for example, we took most of the money from the Department of Education, which I don't think we should even have a Department of Education, but suppose the Department of Education is to provide education for our children, et cetera, blah, 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 blah. It'd be like we're taking the money out of the Department of Education and spending it on climate change. How damn much sense does that make? It makes as much sense as this stupid policy does.
Well, going back to your other point was, we're talking about a theory here.
Yeah.
A theory. Now, last I heard, a theory was a belief. Not a fact.
Yeah, theories are not facts. Theories are literally theories. I mean, that's why they came up with the word, to describe a belief in something that you can't really prove. There are some indications that maybe this is true and maybe that's true. But, of course, in this case, we've already figured out and found out, and it's been proven that most of the information they give to prove their theory is BS to start with, or made up completely out of thin air in some cases.
And, of course, our liberal media is not reporting any of this.
No, because, you know, I'll tell you what. I've thought this for a long time. I don't know if I've ever said this on the air. Conservatives, for the most part, most conservatives have a belief in God or some kind of entity that they believe is out there, okay? Most progressives, at least a lot of them, do not. Now, some do, but a lot of them do not. And so I think that in order for them to have something higher to strive for, they have to have something that they believe in altogether as a unit, so to speak. And I think climate change is their God in a lot of ways. It's something they could all band together about, all have ties to. They can all donate their money. And we'll talk about donate money here a little later in the show about some stuff. And, you know, I don't know.
I hope you're wrong on that one. I don't know if I've ever thought that, but.
Well, they treat it like a religion. Think about it. They're so fervent in their belief and in this theory, they ignore fact.
I think some are. I don't know if all of them are.
Oh, no, not all. Not all. You couldn't say that about anything, really, I don't guess. But I don't know. It's just a theory of mine.
Well, I know Obama is. Obama's like, oh, it's you know, and I know Al Gore is.
Yeah, we're all flat earthers. If we don't believe it, we're all flat earthers. We don't.
Yeah, and those guys are extremists. But I don't know. I don't even know if Hillary is. I haven't heard her talk about that. But maybe she is. Maybe you're right. But that's not been something she's, you know, it's not high on her list. At least I don't think it is.
It may not have been her focus, but if she's going to win the nomination, which apparently she will do in a breeze in the Democratic side because there ain't really a whole lot competing with her. But if she has stiff competition, she's going to have to at least tacitly give her approval toward this whole notion of climate change, because there are many, many, many on the left that's like it's almost like when you're a liberal or progressive, there's a few things that are sacred cows you can't touch. One of them is abortion, on demand, regardless. And one of the others, I think, is climate change. The whole idea of global warming and global cooling, whatever the hell you want to call it that week, depending on what the weather is that week. I think those are two of the... It's like... there used to be a theory of... Not theory, but actually a saying that conservatism had... It's like a stool with three parts. You know, you had the economic part, the, you know, national security and free enterprise. I mean, there's a lot of different little things on that you could use. But I think with liberalism, progressivism, there's at least two legs on the stool. Maybe that's why they're so crazy. They don't really have a third or fourth leg to the stool. But I think abortion and climate change is like two of the biggies. If you don't agree on both those things, I'm not really sure you're a liberal or progressive if you don't adhere to both those.
I think you're right in that respect. I think it's getting there. I just don't know if it's there yet. But yeah.
Yeah, it may not be. Again, it's a theory.
It's your theory.
It's my theory. Right, exactly. And my theory is just as valid as their damn theory, right?
Well, yeah, of course.
Anyway, all right, let's move on. But I just think it's just silly as hell that the Department of Homeland Security, they're spending a great deal of their money on an issue that they shouldn't even be concerned about. It has not, this whole thing of, and you've heard Obama say this, you've heard numerous people say this, that climate change is the biggest threat to America and our national security. I'm going, what?
What an idiot. He's just an idiot.
But that, yeah, I know, but he's not the only one that says that. I think Joe Biden said that, and there's been numerous people.
Well, Biden said he's part of the administration.
Well, yeah, but there's been other. But, I mean, what I'm getting at is there's a lot of liberals and progressives who think that way. They think that that's our biggest problem, And but again, why DHS is spending money on it, I have no clue. It'd be like, again, just take any other Department of Transportation. Should they be spending all their money on climate change, Department of Transportation? I don't think so.
Well, I think it's like spending money on Solyndra. Give them $500 million for one company, and they just piss it away. You know, I believe this administration is doing that. I mean, doubt they're doing stuff like that. And I believe that, again, the liberal media doesn't report it. So who knows what else they're doing?
Well, that's the other thing is, you know, we're supposed to have congressional oversight on all the spending that goes on. And the reality is we really don't anymore. And the reason we don't is we pass these stupid budgets where nobody actually goes through and figures out what's being spent on what. They just basically take whatever they had and they approve, again, without reading the freaking bills. They just approve an increase or whatever. They never approve. By the way, they never approve a decrease in funding. I don't think I've seen that.
Yeah.
It's always an increase or, at the very least, the same amount of money they had the previous year. The idea of cutting back is just foreign to our congressmen and our senators, to be honest with you. Nobody gets it. At over $18 trillion. By the way, I added a debt clot to redstatetalkradio.com.
I saw that. Talk about depressing.
Yeah. Just go to redstatetalkradio.com and look at that thing and just watch it. Just watch the wheels come off of it, man.
I don't have to, you know, I don't. Anytime I get depressed, I knew I could just type in debt clock on Yahoo and look at it and go, oh my God. And it's like a fan, you know, just keeps
turning.
And now you've added it to the website. I'm like, oh, look at this. I get depressed every time I look at the website now. Thanks,
I would have added it later, but I couldn't find one that I liked. And I couldn't find one that would fit to where I wanted to fit. Some of them are like really big debt clocks. You know, they would take up the whole page. Yeah, I thought, well, I don't want that. Yeah. I found one that's just right, the right size, and I could fit it right where I wanted it. And it's prominent right on the page. Right there where you got the logo, you got the Listen Live button, and right there it is, man.
You can't help but look at it.
You can't help it. That's what I wanted. I want everybody who visits the site. We get – literally at least 1,000 visitors a month, at least. A 1,000 visitors a day. And at least. and sometimes like a lot higher than that. Depends on if we have a really good story or something like that. But with 1,000 visitors a day, I thought, well, at least 1,000 people a day are going to see that damn thing. You know, and maybe it starts sinking in on some people.
I won't be one of those thousands anymore.
You're going to quit just going.
I just can't. Because I can't keep them looking at it because it just clicks away. And it's not the first three numbers. It's the first six numbers, sometimes seven numbers that click all the time.
Oh,
that's the digits, you know? It's awful. It's just awful.
It just rolls over just.
It's just awful. It really is. It's just depressing.
Yeah.
And I think, oh my God, at what point do you go enough's enough?
Well, I was there about, I don't know, $8-10 trillion worth ago, something like that.
Yeah, back when Bush was still around.
Yeah, and I thought that was insane, the amount of
money. It was the same back then.
Yeah.
What did he leave office with? $8 trillion?
I think it was like 9.5 or something like that.
Okay, $9 trillion, and we've got $18 trillion now?
Basically, we're about double. We're real close to double.
Obama's doubled it.
If not more. It might be more.
He's doubled it in 6 years, and it took 40-something presidents to make it in 200-something years.
Yeah. Oh, I think that's the way that kind of goes.
And this guy is the best thing for our country. He's president of the United States.
Oh, by the way, before we get into that, did you hear the stupid statement where he actually said, our economy, since I've been, they asked him what he was, one of his biggest, his pride, what was he so proud of during his 6 years as president? He said that he saved the economy. He was so proud of that. And that was that was the first thing out of his mouth. So my jaw drops to the floor. And he talks about, and then he says, and we're a lot safer. And I'm thinking.
And the polls say otherwise, Mr. President. That people are worried about the national security, which they've never been worried about that since, since the 60s? The Cuban Missile Crisis?
Well, another little thing, a tidbit I ran across this morning, okay? We have over 400,000, repeat, 400,000 deportion hearings. I'm not saying that right, I don't think. But anyway, hearings for people to be deported. Let's listen to it that way. We're backlog. We have a backlog of over 400,000 of those. And I think the thing I read was we wouldn't be able to get to, assuming we could do like 3,000 a day. I mean, whatever the deal was, it was going to take us several years just to get the backlog out of the way. But we've got I forget the number, there's a whole bunch of immigration judges who are retiring this year. And the Obama administration is trying to hire as many as they can to deal with the backlog. But on top of that, we're taking in all these children, over 60-some thousand, I think, this year or whatever. And they all got to have hearings. I mean, it's just – and so when you start talking about he made us safer and we've just opened the damn floodgates to the border over the last several years, give me a break. Assuming that his policies in the Middle East were good, which they're not, and the Middle East is on freaking fire and it's going to come to us eventually if it's not already here, which I believe that they're already here. Even our own government says there are thousands of ISIS radicals already in the country. And we had proof of that just the other day in Texas. What, last week in Texas? The two idiots who showed up and got their hats handed to them real quick.
Why would anybody go to Texas to be a terrorist?
Well, that's like...
these guys come out with... AK-47s, and they get taken out by a guy with a
Glock or something. Whatever.
Yeah. A revolver or whatever he had.
Well, I have inside information. These two guys were actually trying to compete for the Darwin Award. That's why they went to Texas to have a terrorist attack. You would think you'd go to someplace like Maryland or Connecticut or, you know.
Yeah, an easy target.
An easy target and someplace where they're not known for their guns. And
Texas, everybody has a gun, don't they?
Yeah, or go to go. Well, I started saying you could go to Chicago, but everybody in Chicago's got guns too, and they're killing each other left and right.
Yeah.
So that might not be a good plan, but anyway, okay, let's move on. The Trans-Pacific Partnership. There's an article on this from The Guardian that I've got posted on RedStateTalkRadio.com. This thing, first of all, Ken, what would you say if we were trying to negotiate a trade deal and A, it's top secret, B, our own congressmen and senators who want to see the trade agreement so they know what they're voting on have to go to a super secret room and look at the stuff, but they can't take copies of it with them. They can't stuff it down their socks like that guy did for Hillary a long time ago. and they can't discuss it to the media. And so nobody knows what's really in it other than the administration. A bunch of corporations know what's in the agreement because they helped formulate the agreement. But our own representatives really don't know. Or if they do know, they can't talk about it. And they're supposed to be able to cast an intelligent vote on this thing. Does that not set off alarm bells like crazy?
You know, I think that with a treaty. When you're talking about a trade agreement, I'm like, huh?
Well, in a sense, it's kind of like a treaty, but it's more so about it is a trade agreement, a trade pact, whatever you want to call it. But I don't even believe that should be true of a treaty. I mean,
really, I agree.
Anything that we're doing, our representatives should be able to get a copy, take it home, and read the damn thing. That ought to be, you know, whatever. But secondly, we need to be able the American public should be able to read what's in it.
No, we need to pass it, and then to see what's in it.
Oh, I forgot. That's how we do that now, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know. Where were you?
Well, what's the point in reading it, right? Just go ahead and just pass the damn thing. Just take Obama's word for it, because he's been right about everything thus far, right?
Just take your medicine, Primo. It's good for you.
Yeah.
It's this whole administration. Aren't you counting the days? I am. I'm counting days, and I'm going.
I need to put a clock up on the website for that.
Yeah, there's a clock you need. That'll make me feel better. Right next to the gross national debt. Right next to the
debt clock.
Put Obama's last days in office.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea. I may do that.
That I'll watch.
Yeah. Anyway, the point is, now here's the thing. Originally, the Republicans, pretty much most Republicans were for this because, you know, the old thing of the Republicans, you know, all about business and stuff, which in some ways is true. The Democrats were against it. Now, they weren't necessarily against it because of the business aspect of it. They were against it because of the labor unions were against it. And so if the labor unions are against it, pretty much the Democrats are going to be against it. And anyway, to make a long story short, they had a vote on this thing. It was defeated, which was good news. Because what they're trying to do, the Senate is trying to get, the president's trying to get what they call fast-track approval, which means that if they give him fast-track approval, here's what it will mean. Number one, he can go ahead and negotiate the terms. Number two, they cannot offer amendments to it like you normally would. In other words, if they bring it to the Senate and for consideration, normally you'd be able to add amendments and say, well, we don't like this part. We want to change this. Or we want to do this. We want to add this, whatever. We want to subtract this. If he gets fast-track agreement, it cannot be debated, and it cannot be filibustered. You can't get Rand Paul or Ted Cruz go up there and filibuster to try to get attention to the situation. So it failed. And the reason it failed because the Democrats wouldn't go along with it, and there were not enough Republicans. You had to have some Republicans and Democrats in order to meet the threshold. And it failed. However, smoke-filled rooms cranked up over the end of the week and this weekend. And supposedly they're going to have another vote this next week, and they're saying it's going to pass now. So we get screwed again by our elected officials.
So do we find out what's in the trade agreement after it passes? Or is that like still top secret?
Knowing this bunch, I would guess that it's going to be top secret for a while longer until they can figure out a way to explain all this crap to everybody. That's my guess. That's it. We got to go to break. Thank you for listening to Red State Town Hall. Stick with us. We'll be back in just a few moments.
Tune in to Red State Talk Radio, the new media's talk monster for grassroots.
That's what freedom is all about.
Common sense.
I would be willing to use waterboarding.
Conservative talk radio.
Big spending, liberal.
Red State Talk Radio. WRS Digital, Cleveland, Tennessee.
Commerce.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-400-1756 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 800-400-1756 to take your call now. Call 800-400-1756. That's 800-400-1756. Again, 800-400-1756.
America's premier grassroots conservative talk radio network.
Red State Talk Radio.
Are you tired of commuting to a job that makes someone else rich, working harder than ever, but getting nowhere? Do you hate spending hundreds of dollars every week on daycare, having someone else raise your children? With our opportunities, you can start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss, work from home, and live a happier life. At Be the Boss Network, you'll find hundreds of work from home opportunities that you can literally start today and be earning money as soon as next week. Go to freedom36.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You get to be the boss. Get out of the rat race. Work from home. Go to freedom36.com right now and change your life today. That's freedom, the number 36.com. Go to freedom36.com and start earning money as soon as next week. You be the boss. Go to freedom36.com.
Mr. Speaker, get me a doctor.
The voice of American conservatism. WRS Digital, Red State Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Primo Mondone, General Manager for Red State Talk Radio. We've been bringing you the very best in grassroots, common sense, conservative talk radio for over 5 years now. One thing I've learned in those 5 years is that internet radio is a tough, competitive business. And if the station is going to advance that next level, it's going to require a significant increase in investments in both personnel and infrastructure. Our listenership grew by 42% in 2014, and with our ever-expanding listener base, it's time that we begin the move to a more listener-supported model to provide the station's future financial needs. Therefore, we're asking our loyal listeners to consider making a donation to help us reach our goals. Monthly subscriptions begin at only $2 per month, so please, help us restore conservative principles to our republic. Visit our website and become a Red State Talk Radio supporter today.
Red State Talk Radio, the talk monster. Tune into Red State Talk Radio, the new media's talk monster for grassroots.
That's what freedom is all about.
Common sense.
I would be willing to use waterboarding.
Conservative talk radio.
Big spending, liberal.
Red State Talk Radio, WRS Digital, Cleveland, Tennessee.
Are you a homeowner at least 62 years young? Need extra money to make ends meet? With a government-insured reverse mortgage loan, you could use the money as you choose. If you need money, a reverse mortgage could be a real blessing. There's no monthly mortgage payment, and you still own your home. Plus, you can use the money to pay off bills, make ends meet, or as you see fit. If you're a homeowner at least 62 and you need money, make this no-obligation call right now and learn how a reverse mortgage may allow you to eliminate your mortgage payment, remain in your home, and get extra cash. Call right now, 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254, 800-365-7254. That's 800-365-7254. Borrowers are responsible for paying taxes and insurance. AAG offers FHA home equity conversion loans. AAG is based at 3800 West Chapman Avenue, 3rd floor, Orange, California, 92868. Visit AAG.com for more information. NMLS number 9392.
Red State Talk Radio, the talk monster.
Okay, welcome back. Let's talk about Obamacare. We haven't talked about that in a week or two.
What do you mean? We always talk about Obamacare.
You know what? Just about every week you could talk about it. And most of the time we do. But I think one week we missed because we had so much other stuff to do. We just kind of let that go. But here's the thing. Obamacare, the Hawaiian exchange. Now, remember, Hawaii is the place supposedly where this guy was born. There's still a debate about that, I guess. But still, they spent over $205 million on the Obamacare exchange. And it's already imploded. And it's not going to survive, and they're going to have to move to the, quote, federal exchange. Now, this has already happened in a couple other states, like Oregon, for example. Remember Oregon, Ken? That was the one I'm pretty sure for a long, long time they never signed up the very first person.
Yeah, that was Oregon.
And I don't know if they ever got one guy on there or not, but for a long time, there was not a single person that could get through the damn website and get signed up.
Yeah, the whole state.
The entire freaking state. And you know Oregon is a blue state. So you know they were wanting it bad. But they couldn't get it.
So,
anyway. So $205 million right down the tubes. But here's what makes it worse. Remember that little Supreme Court case we got going on about the subsidies and all that kind of stuff? And remember, according to the actual Obamacare law, if you don't set up your own state exchanges, you cannot qualify for subsidies. Now, assuming the Supreme Court agrees with that, in other words, assuming the Supreme Court agrees that the law says what the hell it says, and not make something up like they tend to do sometimes, Hawaii is going to spend all that money, and they're not going to won't be able to for subsidies from now on. I guess it will be for the first couple of years while they had it up and running, even though we're losing money out hand over fist. Cannot anybody in the administration, and I heard this just the other day, they touted Obamacare as a complete success. It had some rough patches in the beginning, but it's working well for the American people now.
Well, the bad thing about it is that you don't hear anything from the Republicans.
We talked about this last week.
Yeah, it's gone quiet on that end. That's the problem.
Except for when Ted Cruz is doing a campaign speech, he says we need to repeal every last word of Obamacare. He says that. It's a standard line he uses in every speech he gives. And that's all fine, but nobody's really talking about it anymore. I guess for a lot of reasons. And maybe just because the website's working better than it used to. Still, you can sign up on Obamacare a lot easier than you used to could. There's no doubt about that because they fixed the front end. The back end is not fixed. It never has been fixed. And the back end refers to figuring out the subsidies on your tax credits and all that kind of stuff. And H&R Block did a thing this tax season showing that basically, I think they said two-thirds of all the people who got subsidies got the wrong subsidies. And basically, two-thirds of the people who have Obamacare who got subsidies are going to owe money. And most of them are owing anywhere from $600, $700, $800 that they thought they were going to get as a refund. So now their refunds are going to be less. And I guess in some cases, if you didn't have a very big refund, you'd actually owe money at the end of the deal when you do your taxes, depending on what your situation is. I mean,
surprise.
Yeah, but here's the thing is the IRS is basically saying they're not gonna penalize anybody who didn't turn in their taxes. Like in other words, let's say you find out, oh my God, I'm gonna owe $700 and you don't have it. Well, they're saying they're not gonna penalize them for that because they feel like, well, that was the government's fault. You know. I can sort of see that, but you know, if the IRS makes a mistake with me, Ken, and they say I owe money, I don't get a break like that. I still have penalties and interest.
Doesn't it bother you every time you talk about Obamacare, the IRS names comes into play? Doesn't it bother you?
Yeah.
I mean, it just bothers me. The IRS has become this go-to Gestapo for the government.
That's a good word for it. That they are the Obama administration's Gestapo. Yeah, that's.
Well, they've always been the Gestapo. They've become more so that.
Yeah. Either the Gestapo or the SS, whichever. I'm not sure which is, depending on which way you look at it. But I just think we just need to admit that this thing is a complete failure. Contrary to what the administration would have you believe, Obamacare is a utter failure in every sense of the word. And I'm with Ted Cruz on this one. It just needs to be completely repealed. And we need to come up with now we need to do something about healthcare. I've said this all along. Healthcare in this country costs way too much. And we need to address that, but we need to address it using market principles. And we need to keep the government the hell out of it as much as possible. And I do not want government price controls on my health care. I don't want that. I don't want that. Government price controls on anything is a horrible idea. I don't know of a single time it's ever been used that was good.
A lot of people are going out of the country for surgeries that cost a fourth of what they cost here.
Yeah, I saw a thing on Facebook. You probably saw the same thing. Something about going to get some routine procedure. I don't know if it was an appendectomy. I mean, it wasn't an appendectomy. It was something like maybe a gallbladder removal or something, whatever it was. It was something pretty simple. And in Spain, I give an example. In Spain, whatever the procedure was, it cost $7,000. Here in the U.S., it was over $30,000.
Mm-hmm.
And assuming it's just a simple procedure, assuming the doctor that you have is qualified and whatever, I'm thinking, well, why are we paying all that much more? And one of the reasons is because of the way we have our insurance set up in this country. Employer-based insurance, a lot of people think that's a good thing, but actually it's not. And the reason it's not is because I don't know if you experienced this or not, but I have because I'm on my own. I don't have employer-based health care like you do. But what I'm getting at is if you're having to pay the bill yourself, if you're going to have a procedure done, let's say you're going to have a CAT scan done or whatever, and you tell them you don't have insurance, they will literally cut the price by 45, 50, 55%, about half. That shows you right there what the hell's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And so they say, well, if you don't have insurance, we can cut that down to you. Your $10,000 thing will only be $5,000 or whatever the magic number is. And literally, I had a case just recently where I had to have something done with my heart, and it was a $1,700, $1,800 procedure, and they quoted me a little over $1,000. So it wasn't quite 50%, but it was around 40, 45.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of crap's got to stop. I mean, here's the thing. A procedure should cost the same no matter whether or not you have insurance or whether or not you pay for it yourself, right? Should that not be the way it works?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, Obamacare is not going to change it.
No. No, it's making it worse.
Making it worse. That's there's the problem in itself. You let government get its fingers in this stuff, and things don't go down in price. They go up in price.
Yeah, if you want to lower prices, the way you do that is get the government the hell out of it as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, you get the insurance companies out of it as much as possible, to where they don't dictate the prices and they don't dictate the reimbursements and all that kind of stuff. This stuff should be a lot simpler than what it is. And I'm not for socialized medicine, but at the same time, there needs to be some kind of common sense applied to what we're doing. And again, I think free market principles will do that. And we've always said before, Ken, you and I think pretty much both agree, if we could go out and get our insurance policies across state lines, if there's a place in Texas that has really great policy and a really great way of doing it, and they have a low price, I should be able to go to Texas and get my insurance. I shouldn't have to only be able to get it from someone in Tennessee.
Yep.
So.
It's called free market.
Free market. And if you do that, guess what? Everyone's prices will come down to be competitive.
Yep. That's the way it works.
That's the way it works. If you're selling an alternator for a $19.99 Ford, guess what? You'll be able to find a pretty cheap price based on competition. If you call around all the parts stores in your local town, they're going to be pretty much about the same. Now, one guy may have a higher price, but assuming we're talking about the exact same part, Why are the prices the same? Because they all know each other's prices, and they keep them as close as they can so they can be competitive. So they get to sell the alternator. They get to sell you a battery. They get to sell you a muffler. Whatever it is you're trying to get for your car, that's just the way it is.
Gas stations.
Yeah, exactly. There's a good example right there, gas stations. And even though we have federal intervention in some of that, the point is, for the most part, gas prices could be different if you're living in a city, on one part of the city versus another part of the city.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But in that same area, let's say, for example, you're on the west side of Atlanta, and you start going through the west side of Atlanta, and you get to, like, let's say you're in your community, you're in Smyrna, basically. I would bet you within 1 to 2 to 3 cents per gallon, almost every gas station in your general area are all within 1 to 2 to 3 cents, pretty much.
Yes, until you get to Vinings, which is a more of a ritzy type area.
Yeah, and you start moving up into a nicer neighborhood, and the price is going to be higher. But then again, think about it. If you're having to buy the real estate to put the gasoline station in, and you're in a very rich neighborhood where real estate prices are higher, you'd have to have a little bit more money in order to be able to afford the lease for the station and or purchase of the land the station's on, right? I mean, it just kind of makes sense.
It does, yeah.
So there's all kinds of factors, but the point is, generally speaking, things will be pretty evenly priced. And that way, because of competition, everybody gets the best deal possible, at least for the most part. You know, there's exceptions to everything.
Right.
But
it's the most fair way.
It's the most fair way. So get and competition in healthcare.
Hence we go from there to the fair tax.
Yeah.
That's a whole other show, isn't it?
You talk about another show. We actually need to do one on the fair tax.
Yes. Yes, let's do that because, you know, it's getting toward, it was never talked about really. How long has fair tax been going? It's been like the late 90s or mid 90s.
I think it's about 25 years or more.
So, yeah. So, and you didn't hear about the fair tax really until nationally with when Obama ran the first time. You start hearing a little bit about it, and you know Huckabee is a fair tax guy.
Right,
he comes out right out and says it.
Herman Cain,
and yeah, and you didn't hear it. Now you're starting to hear about it on the national scale. So.
Well, you know, one of the first places that I heard about it that I was Neil Bortz. He wrote 2 books on the fair tax.
Yeah,
I read both his books. I think Neil Bortz came along, and then Herman Cain, and then now Huckabee. And they're one of your senators or congressmen in Georgia.
Linder.
He's actually come out again, and they're starting to get more traction. Now, they don't have enough for it to pass. That's just the way it is. That's being reality. But it is gaining steam. Now, it's taken 25 years or whatever for it to get this far. But, we'll do a whole show on this, but I think it's the way to go, and it's the way to take politics and lobbyists away from Congress, at least away from the tax code, because it wouldn't really be much of a tax code if we went for fair tax. And we'll explain that later. Like I say, we're literally going to – let's just go ahead and just plan on doing that here pretty soon. We should have done it April 15th when tax time was around, and we just got busy on other stuff. So whatever.
Well, with Barack Obama, there's never a dull moment.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. When you do a show like this, ladies and gentlemen, you can plan to do something, but then something breaks in the news, and you go, well, we got to talk about this. You know, at least mention it. Let's move on here. We're running out of time here. Real quick, Marco Rubio was at this foreign policy deal this last week, and there's a story on Red State Talk Radio from the Daily Beast. Now, first of all, the Daily Beast is a progressive liberal website. Okay, let's get that straight. And they're saying that Marco Rubio schooled Jeb Bush on foreign policy. I actually looked at some of the clips of this, and Marco Rubio made Jeb Bush look like a fumbling idiot. So, and we've said before, Ken, we've talked about Marco Rubio. One of his strong suits is foreign policy. He kind of knows his stuff there, pretty much.
Yeah.
And Jeb Bush, in a way, was showing he's not really ready for prime time. And what was so bad was not only was he fumbling around and couldn't get the names right of some of the terrorist groups and all this kind of stuff, but he was saying things that just weren't true, and Marco Rubio corrected him, which was not, I'm sure Jeb Bush didn't really appreciate that, but, you know, that's just the way it goes when you jump in the arena sometimes.
Well, when you talk about the polls putting our national security at the very top of the list, you've got to say Rubio's got a really good chance.
That improves his stock. Yeah, improves his stock, definitely. We only got about 7 minutes left, so we got to flash through a couple things. One article, Kim, we're not even going to talk about, we're just going to go on. Trains, blame, and infrastructure. The American Thinker has an article on redstatetalkradio.com. This train wreck up in the Northeast, I think it was going from was it going from D.C. to Philadelphia, or where was it going?
Philadelphia
to New York, maybe. I forget what. But anyway.
Something like New York, I think.
Yeah, it was somewhere up. It was in the Northeast Corridor. That's really all that matters. The bottom line was, immediately the Democrats, when this train, they started talking about, oh, we're not spending enough money on infrastructure. Those damn dirty Republicans, blah, 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 blah. And the thing is, we're spending tons of money on Amtrak. This is an Amtrak train, by the way, which is pretty much everything up there.
Throwing money away.
We're throwing money away. Here's the thing. When Amtrak was first devised in the 1970s, Ken, they said it would be self-sufficient within 3 years after pouring all the money in Amtrak, right? Exactly. It has never been profitable. It's never even broken even. Never. And the thing is what? Almost 40 years old or more?
They just keep propping it up with more money.
And here's the thing. It had nothing to do with the infrastructure. The train was traveling at 106 miles an hour in a 50-mile-an-hour curve. The engineer hit the brakes, slowed it to 102, and that's when the black box quit working because it was crumpled up and crashed when the thing derailed. Okay? Now, we don't know why it was going 100-something miles an hour on a 50-mile-an-hour curve. The engineer, because he had a concussion, says he doesn't remember what happened. But the black box clearly shows he realized it at some point, pulled the brake, but it was way too late. I mean, you're entering the curve at 106, you hit the brakes at 102, and then the black box quits recording at 102. That means you pretty much, that's when you derail. So, I mean, it's like, it's almost like he, I don't know, I can't prove this, but it's almost like he went to sleep and woke up when the train started rattling because it was about to derail. Now, I can't prove that at all, but...
That makes the most sense, doesn't it?
Well, here's the thing. If he was wide awake, why would he not have slowed the train down and or applied the brake sooner?
Yeah.
Because going from 106 to 102 is nothing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So, now, if he applied the brake at 106... and he hit the curve at 70, you think, well, okay, yeah, he was definitely trying to. Because still, you start going, well, why the hell was he going 106 to start with? But
I don't understand why a train can go that fast in the first place.
Well, I'm sure they can, but a lot of times they don't because we're going through major cities and there's all kinds of stops. And you know, here's the thing: I live in a small town. You know this, Ken, and we got railroad crossings. We got trains that come through here. And every time they go through our part of the woods, they slow down because they're going through a populated area. Then once they get outside the city, they speed up. But then next time they hit the next little population deal, they have to slow down again. That's what they do in Tennessee. I don't know. Now, I just assume they do that up north, but maybe they don't. I know they have to slow down if the curve only is rated for 50 miles an hour. I understand that. But what I'm saying is maybe they don't slow down just because going through a populated area as long as it's a straight track and there's no real reason to, assuming the track's in good shape, et cetera. I don't know how all that works.
Well, I would say, I mean, unless you're a speed train like they have in Japan or whatever those places, I understand that. But these trains... going over like 60 miles an hour, 70 miles an hour, I'm like, why would you go that fast in the first place? I don't understand that.
Well, yeah. I mean, again, both of us are not engineers. We don't know anything about it, really, you know, but it just seems kind of odd, especially through a populated area. And here's the thing. Up in the Northeast, it's pretty much a populated area from the time you hit Virginia up until, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. They're in a lot of wild blue yonder in some of those areas. It's city after city after city after city after city kind of thing, you know, and whatever. So anyway, this whole idea, just spend more money. Just spend more money. We'll fix all the problems. Well, A, that had, money had nothing to do with the problem, number one. Number two, they're talking about creating these bullet trains like you mentioned, these really fast trains. I think, well, yeah, that's really stupid. Let's just, you know, and you'd have to, of course, you'd have to tear up the tracks, lay in new tracks, I'm assuming, whatever. And they're wanting to do this out in California. They were talking about wanting to do it in the Northeast. And because there are a lot of people in the Northeast, that's how they commute to and from work. That's how they do it. Oh, we got less than 2 minutes. Here, Hillary. Hillary and Bill have gotten, listen to this, $25 million in speaking fees since January 2014. $25 million in speaking fees since January 2014. This is May of 2015, so a little over a year, $25 million in speaking fees. My question is, what the hell are they saying to everybody that's worth $25 million?
She's broke.
Well, yeah, she's broke, but like I said, told you before the show, she's made a hell of a damn comeback. But forget that. The only reason you pay somebody $25 million for speaking fees is not that they're great speakers. They're not. It's to buy influence. It's as simple as that. If anybody who doesn't believe that is an idiot.
Well, no, Bill says they have to pay the bills.
Well, that's on his. Yeah, he is paying the bills, and I'd like to see what their hell, what their monthly budget is. Wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, with Bill, if you start figuring up the I was going to say something terrible. If you start figuring up all the hookers and stuff, I mean, because it could get pretty expensive. and I toned that down, ladies and gentlemen. I actually toned that way down. What I was going to say.
Okay. Say something about her pants or something, or what?
Yeah. Two things, real quick. She's only answered 8 questions in over a month of running as president of the United States. That's something you got to think about. And number two, those Chairman Mao pants that she wears, they drive me crazy. She's like Chairman Mao's wife. She doesn't like Bill Clinton's wife. She's like Chairman Mao's wife with those damn pantsuits.
And Stephanopoulos is not a journalist and never was. Can I throw that in there real fast?
Yeah, him and a whole lot of people. Besides Stephanopoulos, we've already found out that there are numerous news media webs, corporations where their upper management contributes to the Clinton Foundation, and on top of that, other journalists. Now, Judy Woodruff is one of them. She's at PBS. She only contributed $250, but she did contribute. And it was for the Haitian Relief Fund, and that's fine. I'm glad she did it. But she's a journalist. She needs to disclose that. All these people need to disclose what they're doing. And if they're disclosing significant amounts of money, like Stephanopoulos did, originally they said $50,000. Now they're saying $75,000. Who God knows how much he actually donated. If you're contributing that kind of money, you might even need to take yourself off of certain stories because you can't really objectively. You know, report.
He works administration, the Clinton administration.
Oh, yes, yeah. He was in the Clinton war room back in the day.
Yeah, he was.
He was sitting right there next to the bald head guy. What's his guy?
He pretends to be a journalist.
Yeah. Okay, that's it. We're out of time.
Oof,
I swear it goes by so quick. That's it. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time. Oh, Ken, you want to give us our
take us out. If we lose freedom here, there is no place to escape to. This is the last stand on earth. Ronald Wilson Reagan, our 40th president of these United States.
Okay, that does wrap it up. We're out of here. See you next time.